Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, man?
Have you even got the carabone noise for this podcast?
Don't worry about it.
I am worried.
It seems like our listeners are worried.
I'm lifting the curtain here.
Oh.
Just off air, we had a spat.
Oh, stop.
Not Pogba Mourinho. What would it be? It'd be more...
That wasn't a spat.
I don't know. I'm trying to...
You want to do something on the show that I don't understand. It doesn't make sense to me. And so I've said, I don't want to do it. I think most people would agree with me.
I think we're going to put it to the people. I'm talking about little musical interludes during the podcast.
As you've all noticed listening to this podcast over the last few weeks, we now have a commercial break, essentially, in the middle of the show.
Right.
And JJ, coming out of that commercial break, wants to have some production value, which I am all for. And you'll see today we have one that makes sense. It's a production piece that leads into a thing that we're then going to talk about. JJ wanted to have a highlight of Troy Deeney scoring for Watford against Leicester City in the championship playoff.
In 2013,
right.
Which is something we reference as one of the greatest moments we've ever seen in football all the time. We put it to music, but it doesn't matter. This is something that's particular to this podcast, and people would over time get used to these.
But it's just so incredibly random.
It's not random.
I want the seamlessness of the highlight into the thing that we're talking about. It makes sense. So I come out of the break, oh, that's Troy Deeney scoring a goal 5 years ago.
You don't mention it.
Back
it's the point.
Now,
that's the whole point. You don't mention it. You don't have to.
Then we'll start talking and people will just be like, "What? Wait, what was that? Why?"
We did it with James Milner last week.
Because we were then talking about the Liverpool
game. I would have
happily
done it without it.
We did the James Milner piece because we then immediately talked about that game.
Hit the carabone noise now so I at least know that you're not mailing this in. Good.
Feel better?
Much better.
We will get to the carabao noise. By the way,
my ideas mean nothing to you.
They mean everything. We talked all about it. I thought about it, but I ultimately have decided I didn't really like it.
It's a democracy.
It's not that I don't like it. It's just I don't. Now it's uncomfortable for everyone.
No, it's not. It's
all the parents are fighting. All of our children are huddled in a corner and they're weeping right now. And they're wondering what's wrong with mommy and daddy. Mommy has won this argument.
Yeah, I'm glad you painted yourself as mommy in this scenario.
We'll get to these Carabao Cup matches. By the way, this noise that everyone is just like needs to have. I get so much blowback when we don't use it. So I realized I had said that I misspelled it. It's not, you don't even know how badly
you
spelled
it. K-A-R-I-B-O-U.
No, it's one thing to like, I misspelled it already from how the Carabao Cup, I spelled it like the animal, the caribou. But then on top of that, if I was just spelling the word caribou, I misspelled that. It was multiple layers of misspellings, but I did find it. So we do have it back, so you can all rest easy. Yeah, I know.
Christ,
this podcast
that's annoying.
Has been terrible without that. I don't know how
you wouldn't believe how many people were like,
people need it.
Yeah.
We'll talk about those games. There actually is a decent amount. For a third round of a League Cup, I actually think there's a lot to kind of digest.
There's storylines, man.
And we will talk about the U.S. Open Cup final, which happened last night in Houston.
Oh.
I know JJ was ready to throw his television out the window of his apartment
last night.
He's not even the Union fan on this podcast.
No, but, oh my God.
That leads me into a question, and then I promise we will get into like the soccer and all that. The cup final last night, it was Amanda's birthday, so we kind of did like birthday. She didn't really want to get home from work and then watch that on her birthday. Imagine that.
Why ever not?
Yeah, and so like I DVR'd it, and obviously it was a horrible game. And when it was over. And this is funny because it's a conversation I just had with a friend last weekend because Everton lost and a friend of his was going to watch the game on DVR and he was wondering, I wonder if I should just tell him. And he asked me what I thought. I said, no, I think you have to let it. You can't do that thing where you tell somebody, know what, don't bother.
No.
I was wondering at the end of that game, it was just so blah and it was so disappointing for Philadelphia, who I support. And I was kind of wondering, it's late now, and I still have a lot of work to do, and I have to wake up really early. I kind of wish somebody had just said to me, don't even bother. But I don't know. Like, what is the right thing to do?
As a supporter, you've got to live that experience.
I know, you're right.
You just have to.
Yeah. I think it's natural to have thought afterwards, I wish someone had warned me, but you're right. I would have been disappointed if somebody had said, don't bother, because I was excited. Like, I want, you know, the buildup, I want to watch the game and live the highs and lows, the many, many lows, as it turned out.
It was such an abomination that the 500 or so people that were representing Philadelphia, some of them Philadelphia front office. So the Philadelphia Union paid for their front office to go out to Houston to watch this. Mm. I think if they'd known in advance, they said, I'm okay.
Yeah. We'll talk a little bit more about that.
It's dreadful.
After our commercial break with a beautiful production piece leading into it. But we start now, once again, with... let's start at Old Trafford, JJ, where Manchester United lose on penalties to the Fighting Lampards, which leads us into...
Lampard and Gerrard, we're keeping an eye on you!
Oh, a big Lampard-Gerrard watch with a keen focus on Frank as Derby County go into Old Trafford and they come up victorious. They move on to the fourth round of the Carabao Cup, defeating Manchester United.
Yes. How would you be the following morning if you were Jose Mourinho, mulling upon the fact that one of your former proteges came into Old Trafford and played the kind of football that your team doesn't play, that created and was creative and did it in his maiden voyage into professional football? This is his first job. How would you feel? You'd probably go after Paul Pogba on the training camp, wouldn't you?
I think that's accurate.
On the training ground. You'd make a smart comment to which he replies. Then you'd ask about the Instagram. When did Paul post that Instagram? You'd call over the social media guy very curtly and you'd ask him that. All in front of the Sky cameras. So, but that's, we'll get to that, I'm sure. Let's talk.
Of course.
Let's talk about the game. And look, that is the context in which this must be framed. I'm just going to name out the attacking fours for both sides. You've got Ander Herrera and Matic in the midfield. And on front of that, in the attacking sense, you've got Juan Mata, Jesse Lingard, Anthony Martial, and Romelu Lukaku. Mason Mount, Chelsea prodigy, teenager. Wilson, Liverpool.
Loney, right?
Loney. Yeah. And David, 33-year-old David Nugent.
What are you getting at?
Like,
it's, how did this happen?
How does this happen? But more than that, I've got to blame the players for this.
Okay.
Because, you know, that's an attacking team with unless they've been beaten down so much by Mourinho that they can't now even beat Derby County. Is this where we're at? It was the most chastening night at Old Trafford in a long, long time. This had throwbacks to the Van Gaal, the early Van Gaal era. Remember they went to MK Dons and they lost 4-0. This was on a level with that.
Well, perhaps, I mean, look, they weren't thrashed. It wound up going to penalties. And you could say that, well, you know what? I was going to try to find a silver lining. I'm not even going to bother. I was going to say that they did show some fight in that Fellaini score.
This is the midfield that was, possession-wise, was bested by Derby. And Derby is a project. It's by no means complete. This is a Derby County team that's been beaten by Rotherham and Millwall already this season.
Yeah, but...
You've got to talk about that.
But they're competing right now for a playoff spot. Like, they look like they're going to be a side that remains in contention throughout the season to get to the championship playoff.
I know. But it's built on Loney's, a journeyman striker, and David Nugent. And 53% possession at Old Trafford, Andrew.
You can't, amazing.
It's amazing. 6 shots on target to United's 4. 497 passes by Super Frankie Lampard's Derby County. 448 by United. And that's a midfield again, I'll say it. Matic, top class. Herrera, top class. Mata, Lingard, Martial, Lukaku. I don't need to go through their individual CVs. What is going on?
Yeah, that's the question. What is going on at Manchester United? Because it feels like we have now come full circle where We're back where we started in preseason with Jose Mourinho sitting on the podium at Los Angeles giving the crisis press conference. It felt like we got through that. United had that stretch of wins on the road. And like that, it's snapped right back to where we started from, which goes to show that, you know, winning can only paper over the cracks so much. A club that has true structure and true depth to it can afford to lose a couple games and not behave as though the sky is falling.
Right.
You are clearly seeing right now that Manchester United, whatever we thought about them during that stretch of wins, that, okay, all is right with the world, it never was. Winning was just a temporary Band-Aid, but it wasn't a true antidote. We're seeing now that they've gone back to having lost a couple, or not even lost. They drew with Wolves, and now they've lost in the League Cup and are out against the Championship side. All of that stuff, all of that bad feelings, it's all come exploding back to the surface, and it feels like now we've almost crossed the threshold where there's no turning back. There's no amount of winning, it feels like, that can kind of cure the ills that have separated a group of important players within Manchester United from their manager.
Yeah, I was listening to Ken Early the other day in the immediate aftermath of the game, who said there's no amount of winning is going to catch them. They're not going to win on a pace now in the Premier League to get back to a Manchester City. You know, they're out of that as well in many regards. They're not going to win the title this season. So we're in this kind of weird area where, how should I put this? I think we're in a holding pattern as well, Andrew. I think we're going to continue to see. Remember I said, let's not over-egg it on Monday because we're going to be talking about this for the whole season.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a soap opera because I don't think they're going to remove the manager. I don't. The tumult that would be caused by getting rid of either Mourinho or Pogba now is, I don't think, something Woodward wants to deal with.
Who do you think is more likely to be there? Look, Pogba, I don't think, is being sold off in the January transfer window, so he's not going anywhere. So I guess the question of who's more likely to be there at the end of the season is an obvious one. Pogba, I think, is the answer to that question over Jose Mourinho.
I think Mourinho, I don't know if he can, like,
look, but, like, will it come to that? Will it reach that point?
Yeah.
Like, I kind of think that we're there now.
You think we're there already?
I kind of think that it's a, you know, Jose Mourinho needs to go into Woodward's office and say, look, this has become untenable. I can't manage this team because there are players who are following Paul Pogba's lead. And in my opinion, as the manager, he's setting the wrong example and the wrong tone for what I want this club to do. So you have to decide, it's him or me. And I feel like we've kind of gotten to that point.
It's amazing. Instagram, it's got to the petty level of Instagram stories in the stand during a game, or now Mourinho's aware of them.
But he's, like, watching that back and forth with them out on the training ground, like, it's just so, it's so out in the open and so public now. Like, you've got players just kind of like circulating through this argument that's happening. Like, that is such a dysfunctional environment for a club that is already teetering.
Sir Alex Ferguson did not want Mino Raiola to get involved or find a way to worm his way into the club, either through a player or any other means. He did not want that. And now that this has come to pass, you can see what's... And I'm not blaming Raiola, by the way. I'm just saying that problems were going to be caused down the line, and their disdain for each other now is palpable. I also question the wisdom. Maybe it's Premier League rules. I know that TV cameras are allowed in for the first 10 or 15 minutes of training. After a defeat like that, I would have shut up shop if I was the social media and the media guys at United. Try and contain this. Although,
well, I guess you kind of hope that there's an air of professionalism about your manager, that he's not going to do something
But let me defend Mourinho for a second here. Pogba comes out, and there's a scene in the office, in the English office, where David is returning to the office, and Neil, the good-looking boss that's replaced him, is there. But there's also Finchie and Gareth.
Okay.
His two lackeys, or not his lackeys really, but two guys he'd want to be in with. And he comes over and he goes, hey, Finchie, slat, high-fives him, shakes hands with Gareth, and Neil puts out his hand and he blanks him. Pogba comes in and he makes no attempt to make nice with Mourinho, to greet him in any shape or form. It's Carrick, and then it's one of the assistants, and then Mourinho delivers a line that freezes Pogba. I love.
Do we know what that line was?
I do not know what that line was. The only audio we picked up on afterwards was where Mourinho summons this, I guess, one of the media guys and asks what time Pogba posted the Instagram post. When did Paul post? That's all we really have.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I've analysed a passage of greeting on the Man United training ground more than I've talked about Wilson's unbelievable free kick.
And it really was, too.
It was stunning.
I screamed while at work when
I saw
that happen.
It was so good. Like, the anatomy of it's amazing because I think his name is Yannick. A guy who follows us on Twitter asked, basically, how has the keeper been wrong-footed like this? But on that left side, you're expecting him to try and curl it over the wall and go to that post. So the keeper's kind of covering that post. He takes two steps to the left, will absolutely kill him. They're not even huge steps. And anyways, even if he didn't, I don't think he's getting there. It was like a knuckleball. It was unbelievable. There was no spin on it. It was up and it dipped wickedly.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And then Fellaini scores late to equalize. And then didn't you think in the penalty shootout, I'll tell you what, man.
It's the best penalty shootout I've seen in a while.
I couldn't agree more. Every penalty, like, for the people who say it's all luck, I kind of sometimes do subscribe to that because a lot of it is down to which way the keeper just happens to guess to go. But this is one of those penalty shootouts where that was just not the case. Every penalty, it seemed, until Phil Jones is at the end, was just so well taken by both sides.
And Mourinho, afterwards, like Phil Jones has been humiliated, let's be honest, with that penalty. Because Phil Jones in his mind was, I just need to get this on the frame. Because the penalty was so weak. And everybody kind of felt if anyone's going to miss, it's going to be Jones. And then Mourinho goes, yeah, I was worried when we got through our best penalty takers and I knew it was Phil and Eric Bailly that were going to be next up. Mm-hmm. But they were excellent penalties. Really, really excellent. And the composure of some of the Derby players in particular. And a guy I know well, Richard Keogh, who's a Derby stalwart, but has never been the most graceful player and certainly not a guy you'd want to see taking a penalty, at certainly not a centre half of much goal scoring note. He comes up and nails his penalty. We should move on from this game, though.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other things to talk about.
And United won't go away. That's the thing.
It's
only fascinating just because, JJ, it feels like a mutiny has happened at arguably the biggest club in England between the players and the manager. And, oh, by the way, it happens to be like the most well-known manager in the country right now.
Well, they're not playing for him with the intensity that suggests that he hasn't lost the dressing room. He looks like he may have.
I'm so curious how this is going to play out. Let's see. We continue also on Tuesday. Manchester City taking care of Oxford United, as you would expect. I don't have a ton to say about that, only except that if you were on Twitter during that game, you would have thought that Phil Foden had kind of come down to the pitch from the heavens, that God himself had delivered us this player.
His range of passing, his movement was fantastic, and he got his first senior goal for Manchester City. Look, Andrew, he's a very good player. You could even see that in the training session they had in New York. He's excellent. He couldn't nutmeg me, and I was wearing jeans. I just need to make that known. Ah, no, he's brilliant.
He's 18 years old. He was sensational in this game.
And he's been sensational in the youth ranks for England all the way up, including winning a World Cup.
Are we looking at the next big thing here?
If Guardiola's commitment is to play him regularly, I don't see why not.
Can he do that, though? We're talking about, like, Manchester City just, they do not operate in this way. He will have to be of such a level to compete with the likes. I mean, look who we're talking about in the midfield for Manchester City. David Silva, you know, De Bruyne when he comes back. Bernardo Silva has emerged and is now a star. This is not easy.
I spoke to Mark Ogden, and he's really excited about Phil Foden, but he's also cautious because if he doesn't go on loan, he said to me over the summer, when will he play? And that's a fair point. What Liverpool are doing with Wilson and guys like that, like Klopp has said, we're putting you on loan, but if you're not playing on loan, then we'll take you back and we put you on loan somewhere where you will play. I think he needs a loan move.
He does. It's a shame that it feels like there's this hidden gem that has just kind of been stymied in some ways because of the size of his club.
Look at Mason Mount. Look at Wilson. Like, they've come into a championship team and a team that, like you said, competing hopefully for the playoffs, and they are playing regularly. And you can see it in them, the confidence, the minutes. It makes a difference. And you hope that's the only way Foden realizes his potential is probably to leave Man City for a period.
I saw on Twitter someone was talking with us or you
repeatedly
about Foden being the next Iniesta,
okay.
Which in the moment seemed like it was just like, haha, let's laugh about this. And then Foden was asked about being the next Iniesta after the game.
Which is nonsense.
And he laughed it off.
Which is nonsense.
Which is...
like at Oxford.
I mean...
Oxford away, come on.
Yeah. Let's see, we move now to Wednesday's couple matches here that I wanted to discuss. And we begin with Liverpool and Chelsea. With Liverpool falling, they relinquish a 1-0 lead. Chelsea come from behind at Anfield to go on and win that game. And I guess the question is, because it's the third round of the Carabao Cup, and because it's you're not necessarily seeing the top 11. So I've been trying to like contemplate in my head how to read into that result.
Well, this is how I'd break it down. There was before and after Milner. Liverpool were before and after Eden Hazard. When Hazard comes into the game, he's magnificent. And anyone who tells you otherwise, oh, well, you know, how can you be magnificent? He was against Moreno and he scored past Mignolet. I would say to them to hang on. He also spun past Naby Keita and Fabinho had two bites at the apple and couldn't get near him. That's how I put it. That was a brilliant goal. But I do think Liverpool lost out in intensity when Milner went off the field. Don't forget he was involved in the turnover in the lead up to the goal. So this is a shot across the bows to Jurgen Klopp about particularly about the weekend's game, about how good Hazard actually is when he's in the form. But I don't think you can read a whole lot into it because Liverpool made changes at during the second half that I felt really were to the detriment of the team winning the game.
Well, they did bring on Salah and Firmino, did they not?
Yeah, they did. They kind of sprung them to to rescue.
Yeah.
They had to be brought into the game at that point. But I think they didn't start. I think you also had Fabinho.
Well, Hazard didn't start either.
No, he didn't. But that's the point. He came on and that was my comment about the shot across the bows. This is how good he is. He was excellent with almost every touch of the ball. Fabinho, his first minutes in a Liverpool jersey playing in that kind of pivot role in the midfield it wasn't very impressive to me. He obviously needs time to acclimatise and to get into his full flow, so that's another factor as well. But yeah, I think it's a learning curve for Keita and Firmino. There's an intensity that Liverpool bring to the game in terms of tackling, winning the ball, closing players down, and that was not shown in the Hazard winner, and they need to be better.
That's certainly true. And look, the other thing too is one of the things that we've really lauded about Liverpool this season has been their centre-half pairing of Joe Gomez and Virgil van Dijk,
yeah,
neither of whom played in this one, as it was Joel Matip and my favourite player, probably the best defender in the world, according to him, Dejan Lovren.
Who's probably got a lot in his mind right now.
Some legal issues have emerged.
Yes, he's got himself entangled in
that. I'm not rooting for that. I just want to make it clear, I'm not rooting for that stuff.
No, I know.
I root against him as a player, not as a human being.
I'm glad you had to make that clarification.
People don't know. Yeah. When sometimes on shows like this, you say, oh, I hate that guy. Like, there's sports hate, and then there's actual human-to-human hate.
And you've got to make the distinction clear in this muddled world of ours.
Sometimes you do. I want to talk a little bit more about Eden Hazard for a sec. By the way, this is, not to make you relive it, but this is the goal of which we speak.
Hazard again. Slipping away from Keita. And trying himself at scoring wonderfully, brilliantly. And quite possibly inflicting Liverpool's first defeat of the season.
Such a great goal from beginning to end. The way he kind of like just almost uses Aspilicueta as a prop. Like, here, let me just pass this to you so I can quickly run up and catch up to it. Just hold it up for me. It gets it back, abuses two defenders.
I mean, the rinsing he gave Moreno was just... oof.
Hard to believe we're not that far removed from when Moreno was a regular fullback for Liverpool. It just goes to show why they are where they are now. But Ross Barkley, after the match, talked about Eden Hazard because... I suggested on the rundown, is he the best player in the league? But that was before I saw Ross Barkley's quote, and Barkley takes it a step further. He says he's one of the best players in the world, and he shows it. He's been showing it for the last 5 or 6 years, and he is establishing himself in the top 3 players in the world. At the minute, he's probably the best player in the world.
Okay. I don't know what I'm supposed to say to that. I would subscribe.
Say anything. I don't know.
The World Cup. Like, he was magnificent in the World Cup. He was... The guy, look at his, even in terms of like, his strength on the ball. There was a few Liverpool fans on Twitter last night trying to convince themselves that he's this Machiavellian diver all the time. I think
he has that rep. I haven't known him to be that way.
One of his best goals for Chelsea v Arsenal, was it last season or the season before? Where he just holds off the defender, bullies defenders with his strength. Does he go over? Yeah, and the one time that he really dived to go over was when Henderson made a tackle on him last night. And that was like in the 89th minute. They were in front of Liverpool's goal trying to kill the game, take the clock down. You know, he's a brilliant player. And if someone wants to tell me I think he's the best in the world right now, fine.
I think it's the same thing that we said about Mohamed Salah last year. It doesn't necessarily mean that he is better than Messi or Ronaldo, but right now he is in this moment. And I think that Ross Barkley is not off base in making that comment.
Yeah, and I don't want this conversation about Hazard 2 and his performance last night to devolve into some kind of FIFA best competition.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We've been through that already. Like that, we've seen the farce of that competition already. I don't really like making these comparisons, but if you want to tell me,
we're only doing it because Ross Barkley did it.
I know.
We didn't bring this up. We're just commenting on something that he said.
Yeah, that whole award ceremony the other night rubbed people the wrong way.
The De Vondelings is the last bastion of true awardsmanship that matters.
I agree.
I think I'm ready to make a comment about Eden Hazard that may anger some of my fellow Tottenham fans. He is... now, look, he's done things that annoyed me in terms of, like, Chelsea-Spurs rivalry.
Right. Okay.
But in terms of
players... You wish you had him.
Oh, my... Well, that's the obvious statement of the century. But in terms of, like, players to watch right now in the league, he's my favorite non-Tottenham player.
That's okay.
There, I said it. I love him. I love watching him. I love his game.
I'm way more forthcoming with these kind of comments than you are. You just like, no one's going to, no, the Tottenham cabal aren't going to come after you for comments like that.
I know, I just feel very sensitive to those things. And by the way, like, how dare you? I read that quote and you say, okay, what am I supposed to say? Like, I'm a D for asking it, and then you go and talk for 5 minutes straight.
I would honor...
Like, it was such an off-base question. No, you've had it with me.
Why do you need the opinion of Ross Barkley to come to what you already know? I don't care what Ross Barkley has to say about anything. There you go.
And last but not least here, speaking of Spurs, they survived Watford in a pretty exciting game. Played... Played at...
At your new stadium.
Keynes. That was uncomfortable, but, you know, it's 50 miles from London, and they're playing home games there. I don't know. It's just weird. They're just in a weird place
right now. Embarrassment for
But Andrew. They do win. A couple things as a Spurs fan that have kind of struck me over the last few weeks for Tottenham. For one, this was important just because I do feel like there's this growing urge that they have got to win a trophy regardless of what that trophy may be. So remain in this competition for as long as possible. I know right now it feels like, oh, whatever, it's the League Cup. It won't feel that way in the last, you know, in the semifinals onward. It will matter. So remain in this as long as you can.
When Sir Ben Kingsley is narrating the tale of how you won it.
Exactly.
It's going to feel much better.
Right. And a couple players that I kind of want to give a special shout out to. Paulo Gazzaniga has come in as the third keeper for Spurs with Lloris hurt and now Michel Vorm hurt.
And has been competent.
Oh, come on. He's been better than competent. That's not fair. All the things that you question about Vorm, Gazzaniga's been a very good shot stopper, but he looks incredibly comfortable with his feet. And that's the one thing that I think Spurs maybe were lacking with Vorm. Sometimes I wonder if they're lacking it with Lloris. But Gazzaniga has come in and he's been excellent. I think for a third keeper, for what they've gotten from him in the penalty shootout, he was great with two saves.
I didn't see any of it.
Oh, so you're just you're just being that guy. Look at you smiling right now. You didn't see any of it, but I was going to make you decided before this. Okay, whatever he says now, just disagree. It's based on nothing. It isn't based on fact. Just disagree. You're such an irritant. And the other guy I wanted to mention was Eric Lamela, who I think
not good enough.
Well, he was man of the match, but whatever.
Not going to cut it.
He was excellent. He set up the first goal, scored the second goal, maybe you could say was at fault for Watford's equalizer, giving up possession in kind of an awkward spot. But there was still a lot that Watford had to do after that to convert. He's forced his way back into the conversation of being a first-team player. And you had kind of forgotten about him because he was hurt so much with his hip injury. But all of a sudden now, again, like we always find these conversations with Tottenham going back to the topic of depth. And, you know, if he's going to be playing like this, then you have to start to once again feel like there is some depth there, whether it's him or whether it's who now ever will be backing him up. But he's just been playing at such a level over the last two or three games probably where you have to say, I don't know how you don't play this guy right now.
Oh, he's been magnificent.
All right. Thank you for taking this seriously. We'll talk about Liverpool for an hour and a half, but I'll bring up one thing on Spurs, and it's all just a joke to you.
I haven't seen enough for you.
Is this all about the Troy Deeney thing?
It's not about that. It's not about that. You're so enraptured with Lamella, but he didn't.
I haven't brought him up in weeks.
No, ever since he scored, you've wanted him in the team from the minute he scored the volley against Liverpool. What a 10-minute cameo he had in that game.
I didn't say anything about that.
Yeah, you said straight away you wanted him into the team.
This is fake news.
Nope. I remember you saying, "Oh well, he's got to start. He scored last against Liverpool. He had to start against Inter. That was your thoughts."
Yep. He's played really well since.
He's played fine.
You haven't watched them.
I didn't see that game. I saw the other games. He was good against Brighton. Yep.
You don't respect me, is what this comes down to. By the way,
no, I'm in that mood now. I'm sorry.
So we mentioned earlier this week, from a listener who wants us to talk about the non-top six with a greater frequency. Okay. And you and I both agreed, oh, you know what? Maybe that's something.
For the most part, yeah.
Maybe that's something that we should do. But before we decided to dive into that,
we do talk about Wolves and Newcastle
a lot. We do. But I understand his point because our focus is usually, you know, like when United, I was going to say when United draw with Wolves, we talk about United, but we actually did talk about Wolves a lot. Nevertheless, we put it to the listeners and said, is this a thing that people want for us to bring back the wheel, put some of the mid-table, lower-table teams on it and spin it? And I didn't look at their responses because that's just how I operate. But you have told me that the people have responded resoundingly and they want this.
Just as we started this podcast, we had a man email us saying, I'd like you to do it.
Well, you know what? We're very inclusive. Ask, and you shall receive.
Football.
So here we go.
Oh, no.
We've got the wheel.
It's a different type of wheel of football. We've gone wheel of football, so you've got to put in that it's crap, it's rubbish. You've got to hit that one. It has to happen.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah. You know what? Should I do the whole thing again?
Do it again.
Okay.
Football.
Oh, it's crap. Oh, it's bloody rubbish. Rubbish.
So here we go. I've taken the wheel, and on it, I mean, you should have seen the glistening names that were on it. Bayern, Real Madrid, Barcelona.
Just ripped them off.
I took them all off, and I've replaced them with the likes of Huddersfield, Cardiff, and so on. So we'll give it three spins, and we promise we will talk about these three clubs for the allotted time here. You ready?
Yes.
And Burnley.
Oh, you can't get much more crappy than that.
Well, kind of.
Well, yeah.
Well, here, wait a minute. Oh, my God. All right. We're on the clock.
Oh.
You say you can't get much more crappy than that. That's an interesting thing to say right now because I think a week ago, well, you know what? I was going to say a week ago I would have agreed. Then they demolished Bournemouth 4-0, and I would have said, oh, okay, well, maybe this is like the resurgence that they needed. But then things happened in the Carabao Cup, and they lost to Burton Albion.
Okay, but Burton Albion and their manager, who was actually the son of Brian Clough, Nigel Clough, strangely, he does a decent line in cup upsets or making cup games difficult. I've tipped them to struggle this season, and I think they still will. They're going to be in and around the relegation zone for most of the season, but they're coming off a big win, as you said, against Bournemouth. They've got Cardiff this weekend, and followed by Huddersfield. I feel this is season defining. They get 6 points out of that. They can start looking to try and push up, as they say, try and kick on. Now, the rest of the season is still going to be difficult, but these are must-win games.
You are right. 6 points right now. Right now, they're currently 16th. They got one win, one draw, and 4 losses right now. There's a muddle of teams that are, it's early. There's a lot of teams that are right around that 4-point margin where they are. But you throw 6 points on top of that, and I think it'll provide some breathing space. Now, Sean Dyche, this is not lost on him that right now, considering where they were, by the way, the clock's ticking because we got 3 minutes. This is the halfway point. Where they were last season, the way the season ended, he understands the perception is that they are underachieving right now. And he spoke about this slow start. He said the club were well recognized last year. They finished 7th in the Premier League. That's a really high achievement for a club like Burnley, but that can bring a bit confusing. Everyone as individuals and a collective are thinking, where are we at? The demands change, the fans change, the noise from the media change. That takes some adjusting. Then you add in the complications from the Europa League and the physical side of that makes it even tougher. I think Sean Dyche is doing an interesting thing here where he is, I don't know if I would go so far as to say he's telling people that what happened last year was an aberration. But he kind of is. I think he's sort of saying, we finished 7th last season. It was really fun.
It's not who we are.
But that, don't get used to that. That cannot be the new normal
for
us. But
I think even in our previews of the Premier League, we said that. That can't be the new normal for a team like him. And also the way he sets his teams up. Andrew, his squad is one of the smallest in the Premier League. He likes to work with a small amount of players. Now, he will take heart from the fact that the Vidra, who was signed from Derby County over the summer, he got off the mark against Bournemouth. That was important. They need Barnes to score. They need Robbie Brady is back running after his injury, so that's going to be like a new player coming in hopefully before the end of the season as well. They've got some decent pieces, but a lot of the things they did last season, it's going to be tough to replicate. I see them as bottom half dwellers. If they can operate in the upper echelon of the bottom half, that's where they will be. If they can do that, that'll be a good season.
You ready for another spin?
Yep.
Around and around, and on Southampton is where it lands. Let's talk about the Saints. Last year was a nightmare for them. In some circles, you'd have to almost say that they were lucky to have avoided relegation. Are you seeing anything this year that makes you think this will be a better experience for them?
When I look at their squad, I think that there are worse squads than theirs, and that makes me happy for them. But otherwise, I don't see a lot. Mark Hughes talked about in the run into the Liverpool game how, creating chances won't be a problem. We've done that, all season. And I just never felt that way. I look up front. We've talked about this for a few years now.
It's been that for a while.
It has been that way for a while. Like, I know Shane Long started at Anfield probably because Danny Ings isn't fit. But I don't see Shane Long as an out-and-out striker who's going to get you the goals. I mean, has he two in the last 2 years or something, 18 months?
This combo of... Look, I remember on the podcast saying that I thought Danny Ings was a good move for them simply because, look what you have. So you may as well take a flyer on a guy who will come in relatively cheap for you, who's been battling injuries. If he flames out, then you're kind of back to where you started. But if he goes back to the Danny Ings that attracted Liverpool's attention, now you may have somebody who can be a competent striker for you. Because right now, you're right. Shane Long is... we all know what he is at this point. A lot of energy, but not a lot of end product.
I see why you play him, but he's got to be setting up for someone else. He's not going to score the goals. Charlie Austin, I don't know why he doesn't play a two up front. Like, Austin's got other powers. He's physical. He can bring guys into the game. And if you look at that midfield, those guys have to step up. Redmond, Højbjerg, Lemina, they have got to get involve more, score more goals on a regular basis to help out this front line. But if you look at it, they're not an awful team. They're not a bad team.
No, I mean, look, between some of the names you mentioned, like, we all know what Pep Guardiola thought of Redmond last season. He was very high on him. Ryan Bertrand is a good player. Cedric is a good player. Oriel Romeu has shown that he can be a good player. Ward-Prowse.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but there's something we're kind of dancing around a little bit here, is that the record of Mark Hughes in management is patchy. And with teams in this zone, he does okay for a while. There's a trajectory upward for a little bit, and then it generally plateaus and it heads towards the bottom end of the table. And I would be worried that this isn't a manager who is capable of making them that much better that they won't be in a relegation fight.
Yeah, I think it's just that creative force. Who will be that player for them? And it's interesting because last year, I mean, Sofyan Boufal scored my goal of the season last year.
Yeah.
But then he fell out of favor with the manager, couldn't get back in the lineup, and he was sent away. So who's, like, you don't care for him, who's going to be the guy then? It doesn't really seem like they have that player who can kick them on creatively. I don't think they're going down, but I don't think they're going down. I think it's another year of kind of mid-tableness, like lower mid, like 14, 15, somewhere around there.
There's two teams definitely worse than them right now.
Okay. But, Huddersfield and Cardiff.
Yeah, but that's not great.
No. Especially when you think of where Southampton... One day, this is off the top of my head, so I don't want to do it right now. I want to actually think about it, but... From the time Southampton reemerged back in the Premier League, so take out guys like Theo Walcott, Gareth Bale, who came up through Southampton, from when their comeback was, we should think like, if they never got rid of anyone, what would Southampton's 11 be right now? Because if you think about some of the players that have come through there,
you're right.
I'd be very curious. You know, Van Dijk. One day we're gonna sit down. We're gonna do that. One more spin. All right.
Okay.
All right, people. You wanted it, you got it. Brighton and Hove Albion.
Okay, let me start on this. Why I feel that I think they'll be okay. I think they'll be okay based on the eye test last weekend. I thought they were pretty good against Spurs. In fact, I thought they were unlucky not to get a point from that game on the balance of play.
I'm not going to cut you off. I know you got more. I guess just commenting off of that game, what I would say is, overall, you're right. It ended 2-1, and it could have been 2-2. However, Tottenham, I thought, were pretty dominant for about 75 of the 90 minutes. The problem for Tottenham was that other 15 minutes was so weighted so heavily towards Brighton completely controlling the run of play, and the fact that Anthony Knockaert did not score when he almost certainly should have. It was right at the keeper, and it was also Gazzaniga coming up big with a save. Yeah, but I get what you're saying, though.
No, and what I mean is that, like, you're competing against the top six team at home, and you're, for a period at least of the game, or for a few periods of the game, you're holding your own. Like, look at them at the back. I like their goalkeeper. Duffy and Dunk, their stats speak for themselves in terms of headed clearances. They're fairly solid there. Knockaert is coming into a little bit of form, which... Honestly, it was a wasteland last season.
He was disappointing last year, very disappointing. Coming off of having been the championship player the season before that, I think they thought they'd be getting more goals from him at this level, and he's not providing them.
Now, a worry would be that you're still relying on Glenn Murray up front, and it's not like they haven't dipped into the transfer market. I'm looking at two guys in midfield positions that are sitting on the bench, and I'm wondering, what has Chris Hughton seen in this time that means he's using them sparingly or in some cases not at all? There's Bernardo that they've brought into the team, and they've also Yahan Kabash. I don't understand why they can't get a run in the side. He just seems to be a little bit conservative. Now, Proper had a great season. He had a great season last season. I think he's a player that's important to them, but they haven't really freshened up a whole ton, and I think they'll be okay, but They're going to be bottom dwellers. They're going to be in that bottom half.
Yeah, and look, you could say that they've overachieved at this point. Now they're 13th right now. They've beaten Manchester United this season.
I know. I take all that into consideration. They're just going to be okay.
Yeah, I think the conversation that we just had with Southampton is somewhat similar to them. Where are the goals going to come from? Now, Glenn Murray has 4 goals right now,
which is good.
Yes, it's very good.
But you're asking a guy of his advancing years, 34 years of age, largely spent his days in the championship to keep that pace up. I think it's a lot to ask.
I think Pascal Gross is somebody who will have to emerge for them and will have to start scoring goals. He has one this season, and it was a penalty in that United game. I think he'll have to be a little bit better. So there you go.
Yeah. I was going to say, I was thinking of taking Knockaert in and bringing...
You pronounce that K.
Yeah,
on the front.
They do. I don't know how to pronounce it. I've only heard other commentators do it that way. But yeah, that's our
Well, I hope you enjoyed it. You never talked
about my club.
Look, the wheel spins the way that it wants to spin, all right? But we'll do it again. We will do it again. I'll tell you what, we're going to come back in a sec. We've got U.S. Open Cup final and a quick what to watch for as well. Don't go anywhere.
Elise and Minotis! First blood in the final, and it didn't take long. Minotis on the move once more. Left footed! Make it 2-0. The basis, it's open for Kyoto. Can he finish? No, he can't. It's an own goal!
Back now on Caught Offside, Adrian Healy on the call of Wednesday night's U.S. Open Cup final. The Houston Dynamo prevail 3-0 over the Philadelphia Union, and I would say that that scoreline is every bit accurate with how that game played out. The Union were poor.
Dreadful. Dreadful performance.
Yeah, it was honestly for a club who, not to say that Houston don't value this. In fact, the Dynamo really... you could tell valued this in that the season is a lost cause for them, and this was like the last vestige of let's get something out of this season, whereas the Union are probably going to make the playoffs and still have a lot to play for. But the fact that the Union are in a playoff race, rested pretty much their entire lineup in a big game over the weekend against Sporting Kansas City, they did win that, but the fact that they rested all those players in such an important game showed you what this meant to them, and for them to have come out so flat. Now, they did nearly score in the first couple minutes, but Fafa Pico was rightfully ruled to be offside. And then right off of that, Houston come back down the other end. Gattis is caught out defending terribly.
Who had a dreadful game.
Yeah, yes. He defended poorly. It allowed Elise to play the ball in that was then converted by Minotas on the header with some really poor defending from Elliott.
What was Elliott?
He was just lost, man. I don't know if he just didn't realize that Minotas was behind him.
Lost all game he was. Absolutely lost. Minotas had time to kneel down and head it into the net.
Yeah.
It was just terrible. And then they concede another goal, which is a good goal from Minotas. Although, I will say, Blake gets his fingertips to it. I'm wondering should he got a stronger hand and pushed it onto the post or pushed it away. But I'm not going to blame him. It was a good low drive. But that was after a sustained, 15 minutes where Philadelphia huffed and puffed and tried to do this and that and never came up with anything. They were the footballing equivalent of constipation. You're pushing. It's just awful. Just awful. They could get nothing done. Nothing. It was... They couldn't string passes together. And I'm looking at the lineup. Sapong, Bedoya, Rosenberry. They were awful. There didn't seem to be a game plan. Taylor Twellman started the commentary by saying, I think the Union are going to want to go direct to Sapong because he'll have the physical height and physicality over DeMarcus Beasley. Didn't matter. Didn't do one. They did one diagonal ball for Sapong to get a flick on, and he fouled Beasley, and that was in the first minute. They did not. There was no game plan. They were a wasteland. They were an embarrassment. They rested players for what?
Yeah, they lost the battle in every third of the field. Up front, they didn't offer much. Midfield was really overrun.
Andrew, this was like a midweek, run-of-the-mill MLS league game in the middle of, like we'll say, April that nobody's really paying attention to. You win, you hope to get a win, you're hoping for a point. It didn't feel like a cup final. Philadelphia didn't seem to approach. And how long did Curtin take to make any changes?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember now when
Jay Simpson came in for Burke.
Well, that was fairly late, though. Was that past the 70th minute?
It might have been.
I'm trying to remember. Well, I'm not sure now.
It was late.
Yeah.
Akam, did he come into the game?
He did. I believe he did as well. I don't know what else to say. Like, they were truly disappointing. Mainly in defense, but really all over the place.
Look at the own goal. Now, I feel bad for...
it was Austin Trusty. For Trust. He was like, you could see it on his face. He wanted
I
to
don't,
just
I
like...
I don't know what he was trying to do.
Well, I knew what he was trying to do.
Open his foot out and pass it out over the line.
Yeah, he's trying to clear that for a corner kick. Let's just survive this moment. But,
oh my God.
But instead, he finished beautifully, quite frankly.
Do you know who stitched him up on that?
Who?
Completely. Was Elliott. So, on the initial... on the initial chance that the ball is cleared.
Well, the ball wasn't really clear. I mean, it was kind of parried away by Blake.
Yeah, but he stays in and he plays the, I think it was it Ellis? He keeps the Houston player onside. He doesn't get up.
When the move first started.
He's just all over the place.
Yeah. No, he had a bad game. There's no question about it. And I felt bad for Austin Trusty in that moment.
But you've got someone in the center of the park like Alejandro Bedoya, who's had a long career in Europe with the men's national team. I didn't know he was on the park.
Yeah.
Useless.
Yeah. You're right. You're absolutely right. I was also, not to make this about stuff beyond the game, because that's what matters, but I'll be honest, man. I was disappointed in the crowd size in Houston for that.
It was so poor. I wouldn't want to hazard a guess at what it was. Empty seats galore.
Seriously.
This is supposed to be your domestic cup showpiece. Terrible. Just terrible. And I don't quite know who to blame for that. Because I agree with Taylor Twellman on this. This is a competition that they've got to get more out of. I mean, ESPN did their part. It's nationally broadcast.
Well, I mean, look, they can only do so much. The competition, is what it is. What do you want them to do? Who's responsible if not the fans themselves?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess,
how was it promoted? I know the weather wasn't great yesterday in Houston, and I know some of our Houston listeners will tell me how the Dynamo never sell out.
Well, that's not good either.
No, it's not. But, I mean, if you look
This is a cup final,
But look at the crowd at the weekend at Red Bull Arena for what should be a big game, Toronto and the Red Bulls. Empty seats galore. The league is struggling in some markets to really grab the attention of people.
The average attendance is still above 20,000, so across the league.
But
now that is heavily weighted.
That's been skewed by Portland.
Mainly Atlanta and Seattle jack that number way up, specifically Atlanta. When they've got games where they've got 70,000, it's gonna skew the number.
But
you're right, it papers over the cracks of some markets.
I was so into the Open Cup last season because Cincinnati's running it.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they knocked out Chicago with Schweinsteiger and everything in that game. But this was, in terms of just the competition itself, it was such a letdown.
Now, the one thing that I would caution you specifically from doing, because before we started, you just went off on these players. Oh, he's terrible, and that guy's the worst.
No, I've been hearing about them forever, and neither in the league.
When have you been? What do you mean you've been hearing about them forever?
Well, how long is Bedoya? We said, me and you have been talking. We talked at the start. We said, Akam's a good move for them.
Right.
Comes in. What's he done? CJ Sapong is a nice guy and I've met him, but is this the return that Philadelphia expected when they got him in as a player?
Well, his game is complete. For what they've asked him to do this year, he's more hold-up play for Pico and Corey Burke to score goals. He's not they're not asking him to be their primary goal scorer like he was a year ago. The only thing I would say to you is before you go off on this tirade and proclaim all these players to be crap, just know that since July 11th, they've lost three games. They've been on fire, and they may very well, depending on what happens over the weekend, where they've got a very important game against Columbus, they may even have a home playoff game coming up in this postseason. So, yes, this was a bad night for a team that, by and large, has been pretty good. So I don't want this to be a scathing indictment on the fact that, the Union, same crap team that we've known them to be. Last night, over the past few months, it's a bit of an aberration.
Across the season, Andrew, they've won 14 games, they've lost 12.
But I'm saying over the past few months, they've figured something out, and they've been excellent. I mean, they've really been, they went to Seattle and won a midweek game.
They're doing nothing. I'm telling you right now, they're doing nothing in the playoffs. If they even make it. I mean, they're 6 points ahead of Montreal in sixth place, so I suppose maybe they are going to make it. I don't know. Just really disappointing.
So you have, I guess this continues the theme nicely of, make grand sweeping proclamations off of sample size.
But is it? In the almost decade since this team has been in the league? I mean,
Danny Califf isn't out there for this Union team. I mean, they're different.
They're talking about extending the manager. His contract last night, there was the...
Look, they're not loaded with marquee players. They're not loaded with superstar talent. If they get, if they get in the postseason, and if they even... I don't want to assume they have a home playoff game, because that's still a stretch. But, you can't say Jim Curtin has done a bad job. If, like, we still have to see the big picture. We don't know how this is all going to play out for them. If they win a round in the postseason, then yeah, we can have that conversation. I wouldn't just count him out.
They can't,
say he doesn't deserve an
extension.
They
can't get up. They can't get up for a guarantee, for a piece of silverware last night, and you expect them to kick on now and do things in the playoffs.
How about the fact that they got to another final? I love when stuff like that gets held against teams. Like, you know, it's held against Tom Brady that he's lost Super Bowls. Well, he's also won he's been to more than Joe Montana. Yeah, Joe Montana won all of them, but so we should hold it against Brady that he's gotten to more but lost those. Like LeBron, he's gotten to more than Jordan.
I was rooting.
But Jordan won all of them. So LeBron he would have been better served to have gotten to fewer but won all of them. That stuff doesn't make sense to me.
I was rooting for Philadelphia last night, and I couldn't believe how limp they were.
It was a bad game. They couldn't get up for a final. Don't extend the manager. Like that's such a small view of it. You're better than that.
I thought Houston were so much better than them. It wasn't even funny.
I agree. Last night, that is exactly what happened. Let's see. We've got a quick what to watch for. But before that, new sponsor alert. New sponsor alert. That's right, JJ. Indochino. Suits, fancy dress wear. It all just looks so much better when it is made to fit.
And when your shoulders are in correct proportions.
Like, I used to walk around wearing suits, like the guy from the Talking Heads, David Byrne.
Yeah, the baggy ones.
That's what my suits used to look like. Yeah. They look ridiculous.
You want a fitted suit, fitted, made to measure your body.
Because if you're wearing a suit that doesn't fit you properly, then what's the point of wearing the suit? Because nobody's going to look at this fancy, expensive suit and say, oh, that's nice. They're going to say, this guy looks like a clown.
Best suit wearer in the Premier League, go.
Let's see. Well, I was going to say Pep, but that's not really his look anymore.
No,
he kind of does like the sweater with like the shirt underneath look.
Yeah, and a massive scarf. Yeah. I think Poch right now is killing it.
Yeah, when he wears that navy suit with like the crest, the cockerel crest there.
Marco Silva as well.
Yeah, yeah. The no tie look. Looks like a composer, I think, sometimes when he's out there.
Maybe he'll compose a few more victories this season.
And maybe all of this is Indochino that these guys
wouldn't
are wearing.
Shock me. Wouldn't shock me.
Here's the thing. Indochino right now, it's the world's most exciting made-to-measure menswear company, so you're going to want to get on board. They make suits and shirts to your exact measurements for an unparalleled fit and comfort. They got a wide selection, high-quality fabrics, colors to choose from. It's all right there on the website. It's so easy to use. Here's how it works. Visit a stylist at their showroom. Have them take your measurements personally, or you can even measure yourself at home and shop online at Indochino.com. You choose your fabric, both inside and out. You choose your design customizations, submit your measurements with all of your choices, and then you just sit and wait. And it's delivered right to you rather than having to go like I did when I went to an unnamed suit store and like was made to feel like a fool. Like they confirmed my weird body syndrome. They were only showing me options of suits that were outside of my price range.
Indochino would never do that to you.
No, that's real stuff, man. So this week, listeners to this podcast can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com when entering Offside at checkout. OFFSIDE. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, the shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code Offside for any premium suit for just $359 and free shipping. It's an incredible deal for a premium made-to-measure suit. You don't see this very often. Indochino are also expanding into casual clothing. Your made-to-measure chinos will quickly become your go-to pant, pairing as easily with a suit jacket as they do with a sweater, and they'll be good for any time of year, for any occasion, from the boardroom meetings to Sunday brunches. Indochinos at an introductory price of $79. Remember, Offside is your promo code to use. There you go. Indochino, welcome aboard.
Yeah, and I think there's going to be a few managers who will get jobs, and they'll be like, I need to look good at the press conference.
Of course.
And there'll be other managers who will be fired from their jobs who will need to look good going to their sports car from the training ground.
Yeah, or their next, job.
Yeah, Indochino is going to cover them.
Real quick, what to watch for here, because we're up against it. Premier League, not a ton of big games, but certainly one that stands out. We'll get to it in a sec. Saturday, your weekend kicks off with West Ham and Manchester United.
Why does that now feel like a really tricky game?
I love this game because you've got this club in crisis going to a side that you would assume that they should handle. But it's a road game in what will certainly be a hostile environment. I'm really excited to see if West Ham are just up for this to try to just like sense it. You can sense the blood in the water right now with Manchester United.
And also, have they found their formula like we think they may have over the last two games? 4 points against the win against Everton and the draw against Chelsea. Declan Rice in the middle. If Declan Rice has a good game against Manchester United, we've lost him forever.
Saturday, 10 a.m., Everton and Fulham, in a game that will have the attention, I'm sure, of many Americans.
The American Derby.
Yeah, I did want to mention, speaking of which, for Fulham, Luca De La Torre of America scored a goal for Fulham, 20-year-old prospect.
In his first game in forever.
Yeah, so something to keep an eye on there. And then Saturday, 12:30, the rematch. Chelsea and Liverpool, as the setting changes, they go back to Stamford Bridge.
Yes, and I think...
this feels really suddenly important.
No,
like it was always going to be important, but...
not suddenly at all. This was the one everyone's got their eye on, definitely. Because it's the first acid test of championship credential Liverpool. That's it.
Right.
And I don't think there's any pressure on Sarri. I really don't think so.
I agree. And he's kind of done that to himself.
He's done that to himself.
With some, you know,
and he's also done it by having a good start beating the teams he should have beaten.
Right. And it helps when he gives press conferences and saying, we're still a year away. We can't be judged yet. So he's kind of like smartly bought himself some time.
Chances he'll go on the nicotine patches? I wonder. I mean, he should. He's just putting this, like, what appears to be the butt of a cigarette in his mouth.
Sometimes you just kind of, I guess, need that. I don't know. I've never been a cigarette guy.
Remember the days of Cesare Menotti on the sideline, or Serie A Italian games? When I first started watching Serie A Italian games, there would be some grizzled manager wearing a fabulous suit in a dugout in some stadium in Italy, puffing away on a cigarette.
And La Liga, Saturday, 2:45, Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid, the Madrid derby. At the Bernabeu, JJ, something happened yesterday that hadn't happened in La Liga since 2015.
Yeah, both teams lost in the same match, in the same round of La Liga.
Yeah, now Barcelona and Real Madrid.
Now, I watched the second half of Madrid-Sevilla because I had to tune in at halftime when they were 3-0 down. Unbelievable. They played three across midfield and Sevilla went for five and they were outnumbered. Now, in the second half, there was a turning point. Brilliant goal by Modric was ruled out for offside, and I think at 3-1 they were pouring forward. Bale also had a shot saved by Vasilek. Brilliant save by the Sevilla keeper. So they did create chances in the second half, but that first half was just a train wreck.
Yeah, and
I did not see Barcelona, but I can only imagine
they lost as well. And then MLS quickly Sunday 1:00 p.m. the Red Bulls and Atlanta United FC. Red Bulls still have never lost to Atlanta. 2-0-1.
Without BWP.
They will not have Bradley Wright Phillips. A 0-0 was the last time these two met. The one thing that I'm curious about for the Red Bulls, we all know about the high-scoring nature of Atlanta. The Red Bulls were coming off back-to-back games in which they allowed three goals, which is not something that you're accustomed to seeing with them. But last weekend against Toronto, they got out with a shutout, a 2-0 victory, a much-needed one. So I'll be curious to see which Red Bulls side shows up for a game against a very, very high-powered attack. And there is a lot at stake here with the supporter shield. The Red Bulls are 4 points back. If they lose this game, you almost don't see any way back. But if they win it, it feels like it's completely up for grabs.
Also, while I have you here, and I know you're worried about time, time is a huge thing, the swirling rumors surrounding Tata Martino leaving Atlanta for the Mexico job.
Yeah.
That is the backdrop to this game. It's going to be
somewhere Jeff Carlisle is sitting right now saying, I told you, U.S. soccer, you should have gotten on that, and now you're going to lose him to your biggest rival, and you're going to regret it. I'm guessing that that's what Jeff's saying. But I just know Jeff has been...
Jeff isn't quite as preachy as you.
Since the day Jurgen was fired, Jeff has been kind of... I don't want to say championing Tata Martino, but he has raised him multiple times on this podcast as I guess, a guy that would be one of his top candidates. And I talked about it a few weeks ago as well, that he kind of checks every box.
If he's leaving what is quite a comfortable scenario in Atlanta for him to take on the Mexico job.
The cauldron of Mexico,
I'll tell you, there must be some wedge of money involved in that.
I would expect.
Big money.
But look, Mexico's a big job.
But
it's a bigger job than Atlanta.
Of course. But right. international football doesn't generally pay huge amounts of money, except in a few cases, the United, US men's national team, the Republic of Ireland, for some reason, and England.
Yeah. That would be interesting. You're right. That's a good call by you to keep an eye on that. So there you go. That is our show for the week. A show where, that featured the Carabao Cup, a conversation about three mid to low table sides, and a U.S. Open Cup final that was dull and drab.
Constipation final.
I think this show was still a solid performance by you and I.
Yes, I think it was. And we also got over some early bickering.
Look, I have no problem with you. Now, that's speaking for me and me alone, because I've seen the looks on your face at various points over the last hour. But, you know, what can I do?
I'd love to put it to the people. I think they should at least get to hear what I had planned as a kind of a little musical interlude. No. They should at least get to hear it. You couldn't even do that.
I'm not saying that it won't sound good. I'm just saying that the randomness of it will leave some people being like, wait, why? Why did I? What was that? They won't be ready for what happens.
Well,
next.
I demand one. If footballing
right.
one
next week, I'll do it.
No. I want more than that. Now I want one with the catchphrases and the comments and some of our more remarkable lines interspersed.
So
in
you
it.
Think you're now negotiating from a position of power? That's adorable.
By the way, in terms of what I ask for, like I usually like. I'm fairly demandy, and you're usually very amenable.
Yeah.
You've crossed the Rubicon now, my friend, by denying me something.
I can't wait to see. So now I'm going to get what, the new mean JJ? Who have I been dealing with for the last 4 years?
You've been dealing with a patient man.
This should be exciting. Well, hey, this was a lot of fun. Hopefully our future podcasts are as much fun, although I can't quite frankly tell right now in the way that you're behaving and the vibes that you're shooting across the table. But nevertheless, to you I say,
take you later, fun boy.
See you later, man.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.